The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 5, 1986 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila, Chapter 24, Text 228 to 278.
Krishna Ramaschaiva Hoy Krishna Manan Vyadha Hoya Hoya Puja Bhagavato Tama. Translation. The words Krishna Ramascha refer to one who takes pleasure in thinking of Krishna. Even though such a person may be a hunter, he is still worshipable and is the best of devotees. Akabhakto Bhadera Kota Suno Sabodani. I shall now narrate the story of how the hunter became a great devotee by the association of such an exalted personality as Narada Muni. From this story one can understand the greatness of association with pure devotees. Akodena shi narada deki narayan triveni snane prayag kodilagaman. Once upon a time, the great sage Narada, after visiting Lord Narayana in Vaikuntas, went to Prayag to bathe at the confluence of three rivers, the Ganges, Jamuna, and Saraswati. Report, the great sage Narada is so liberated that he can go to the Vaikunta planets to see Narayana and then immediately come to this planet in the material world and go to Prayaga to bathe in the confluence of three rivers. The word Trivani refers to a confluence of three rivers. This confluence is still visited by many hundreds of thousands of people who go there to bathe, especially during the month of January, Magha Mela. A liberated person who has no material body can go anywhere and everywhere. Therefore, a living entity is called Sarvagga, which indicates that he can go anywhere and everywhere. Presently, scientists are trying to go to other planets, but due to their material bodies, they are not free to move at will. However, when one is situated in his original spiritual body, he can move anywhere and everywhere without difficulty. Within this material world, there is a planet called Siddha Loka, whose inhabitants can go from one planet to another without the aid of a machine or space rocket. In the material world, every planet has a specific advantage, vibhuti bina. In the spiritual world, however, all the planets and their inhabitants are composed of spiritual energy. Because there are no material impediments, it is said that everything in the spiritual world is one. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purport to text 230. So, this is interesting that every planet has its devuti bina, or specific advantage. Because the material world is filled with disadvantages. So depending on how those disadvantages are counteracted, those are relatively known as advantages. In the spiritual world, there are no disadvantages, so that everything is one. Same spiritual quality. Of course, even within the spiritual world, there is variegatedness, vichitra. There are so many varieties, but in that sense, it's not that, for instance, in the heavenly planets, there are different advantages. In Siddha Loka, everyone has got mystic power. In Darva Loka, everyone is a beautiful singer, like that. But in the spiritual planet, everyone is a liberated soul. So therefore, the differences are much more subtle, much more simply on a level of spiritual variegatedness or mellow or rasa in a very fine way, rather than as in the material world where you get a difference from one planet to next. Just like here in what part of town is this known as? Drua Hills. Druid. The Druid Hills of Atlanta is considered to be a high class area, where there are other areas which are slum areas. Like this, one place has advantages, one has disadvantages. It's much more obvious. There are other high class areas in other cities of America, and there's a difference in this architecture or in the climate. But basically, it's more or less the same advantage, the same, just slightly different environment might be there, but more or less the same. So like that, in the spiritual world, things are more or less the same. We don't see that, although there's variegatedness. But in the material world, there's a very distinct difference between one planet to the next. People are generally trying to move up in the material world to a little better position, but they don't realize that the real solution is to go back to the spiritual world, where everything is perfect, complete, and then you don't have to worry about going up a little bit to the next better planet. So now we're going to go on and read these verses quickly, which tell the story about this hunter that Narada Muni has delivered. Monapote deke mriga che bume pori bana vidda bhagna pada kore dhora dhora pori. Narada Muni saw that a deer was lying in the path through the forest and that it was pierced by an arrow. It had broken legs and was twisting due to much pain. Arakoto dure yaka deke na sukar toiche vidda bhagna pada kore dhora pori. Farther ahead, Narada Muni saw a boar pierced by an arrow. Its legs were also broken and it was twisting in pain. When he went further, he saw a rabbit that was also suffering. Narada Muni was greatly pained at heart to see living entities suffer so. Mrigamari variace bana juriya. When Narada Muni advanced further, he saw a hunter behind a tree. This hunter was holding arrows and he was ready to kill more animals. Shyamavarna rakta netra moha bhayankar dhanurvana haste dhyano jama dandadhar. The hunter's body was blackish. He had reddish eyes and he appeared fierce. It was as if the superintendent of death, Yamaraj, was standing there with bows and arrows in his hands. Patachari Narad Bhar Nikote Cholilo Narade Deke Migo Sabapalai Gelo. When Narada Muni left the forest path and went to the hunter, all the animals immediately saw him and fled.
Krudahoya Byadatari Gali dite chai, Narada prabhave moke, gali nahi ai.
When all the animals fled, the hunter wanted to chastise Narada with abusive language, but due to Narada's presence, he could not utter anything abusive.
Gosai prayana potachari kene aila, tomade ki moralakha mriga palaila.
The hunter addressed Narada Muni, O Gosami, O great saintly person. Why have you left the general path through the forest to come to me? Simply by seeing you, all the animals I was hunting have now fled.
Narada kohe pata bhuli, ailao puchite, moneyaka shangshoy hoya taha kandaite. Narada kohe sana gosai, migare moranam, pitala shikate ami kori oi chekam.
The hunter replied, my dear saintly person, my name is Rikari, enemy of the animals. I killed them in that way.
Ardhamara jivajadi jorafara kore Narada kohe ako bastu magi tumar stani Dyada kohe mrigadi loho je tumar mone.
Narada Muni then told the hunter, I have one thing to beg of you. The hunter replied, you may take whatever animals or anything else you would like.
Mrigachal, chaha jodi, aishamara gore, heha, ami kichu nahi chai, araka dana ami magi matai.
Narada Muni said, I do not want any.
Kali hoite tumi jei, mrigadi mariba, pratamei mariba, arda mara na koriba. you that from this day on you will kill animals completely and not leave them dead. Kohe kiba dan magila amare. Jive duku diteche tomar hoibe. Nagmuni replied, if you leave the animals half dead, you are purposely giving them pain. Therefore, you will have to suffer in retaliation. Purport. Balabhadra Prabhu, Vice President of the Temple, Hare Krishna.
If one gives another living entity unnecessary by similar pain, he still had to suffer the results of his sinful activities. However, if a civilized man kills animals regularly in a slaughterhouse to maintain his so-called civilization, using scientific methods and machines to kill animals, one cannot even estimate the suffering awaiting him. So-called civilized people consider themselves very advanced in education, but they do not know about the stringent laws of nature. According to nature's law, it is a life for a life. We can hardly imagine the sufferings of one who maintains a slaughterhouse. He endures suffering not only in this life, but in his next life also. It is said that a hunter, murderer, or killer is advised not to live and not to die. If he lives, he accumulates even more sins, which brings about more suffering in a future life. He is advised not to die because his dying means that he immediately begins to endure more suffering. Therefore, he is advised not to live and not to die. As followers of the Vedic principles, we accept the statements of Narada Muni in this regard. It is our duty to see that no one suffers due to sinful activities. Foolish rascals are described in Bhagavad Gita as maya paritta jnana, which indicates that although they are superficially educated, maya has taken their real knowledge away. Such people are presently leading human society. In Srimad Bhagavatam, they are also described as anda yatandhaya upaniyamana. These rascals are themselves blind, and yet they are leading others who are blind. When people follow such leaders, they suffer unlimited pains in the future. Despite so-called advancement, all this is happening. Who is safe? Who is happy? Who is without anxiety?
Now, in modern society, we find that there are many societies to stop the cruelty to animals. And they are upset over the horrible conditions in the animal factories and slaughterhouses. So we can see here that this has got some approval by Narada Muni, that animals, if they're going to be killed by people, then at least they should be killed clean and quick, and not have, because of the desire to feed their tongues, satisfy their tongues with flesh. So because of this, we see that how through radiation, horrible suffering, torturous pain, rotting of the bone marrow, and then gradual disintegration of all the tissues. So one may ask, that is this a reaction, or is this the kind of reaction one can expect for causing countless animals to scream in pain and to suffer horrible deaths just so that people can have their tender flesh in their mouths? So when Narada Muni was offered the skins and the flesh, he said, I don't want any of these things. I just want you, at least, if you're going to eat and kill animals, at least do it in such a way that it causes them less pain. But the real teaching, as Prabhupada has explained, is that there should not be slaughterhouses. Slaughterhouses should be banned immediately, without any hesitation. And if somebody is a confirmed meat eater, then he should be allowed to take the animal in his backyard and kill it with his own hands, just like this hunter is doing. If he's so cruel and hard-hearted that he doesn't mind killing the animal, he wants to eat it, then at least he can take the sinful reaction directly. Many Americans, they don't think exactly what goes on in a slaughterhouse, nor do they want to be reminded of it, actually. But they're addicted to eating meat. But there certainly are some who would go out and kill their animals. In the farms that I had personally seen when I was a small child in America, my uncle killed a chicken. He's running around without his head. So I know there are people who can do this. But at least those who cannot do it, rather than hire someone else to do it, rather than remain in ignorance about the pain that's caused, but if they did it themselves, that would immediately cut down the amount of animal killing in America. How many people are going to go and kill their own animals? Actually, animals are people. They have feelings, they have families, they have they have consciousness, they have everything that we have. The Vedas say that the same soul that is in us, the similar kind of soul is within them. It's simply that in the future they can also take human birth, but now they've taken animal birth due to the laws of karma. Their soul, therefore, in one point of view, you can say that the human birth is a spiritual opportunity, or that that birth of soul is is in a better position to become spiritualized fully. That doesn't mean that other forms of life are not having soul, even though those births are not very conducive towards liberation. If they have soul, it's simply that those souls, the soul in those various bodies, are covered up more completely by the bodies that they're in. So it's very dangerous, I mean it's very fearful when we read this, because then we think that how in one day how many millions and millions of animals are being slaughtered. It says when the sun rises over Maine in the east and sets in California, that there are some hundreds of millions of animals which are killed every day. And the total comes to some 3 or 5 billion animals in a year are slaughtered, and killed, and eaten. So then we think that there has to be peace in the world. There shouldn't be a nuclear war. Yet we are causing so much pain in this country. There's so many living entities. How can the people who are paying for that, who are hiring slaughterhouses indirectly through buying slaughtered meat, to expect not to have to suffer similar pain? It is total ignorance that they think that they're going to get away scot-free after causing so much pain to others. So this is going to be demonstrated in the following verses, where Narada Muni shows to the hunter Madrari how the reaction for killing animals does come back upon one. Sometimes we preach to people how it's better to be an eater of Krishna prasadam, spiritual food stuff, which Krishna only accepts vegetarian and sattvic food. But they're very adamant that they want to continue to eat the flesh. Actually, even in the Bible, it also says that no one should eat blood. Any food that has blood is not for human consumption. It also says that to kill an ox is as if it was to kill a man. There are many verses. Of course, some people find other verses where they translate it to show that in some circumstances, people do eat meat. We find that Jesus came into the temples, the synagogues, and he found that the people were sacrificing birds. And he said, "You've made my father's house into a slaughterhouse." And he threw all those people out and stopped them from killing the birds in the synagogue. He taught that we should love our neighbors as we do unto our neighbors as we would have them do unto us. So animals are also entities. We should do unto them as we would have them do unto us. If we want them to come in another life and to slaughter us, then we should slaughter them. And if you don't want that, then we should avoid this type of unnecessary violence. When God has given us, especially in this modern era of green revolution, sufficient vegetables, grains, milk products, pulses, to give all health and eating satisfaction. If instead, just for the tongue, we are willing to sacrifice everything, then we have to expect that we're going to also lose everything on account of that. We're not going to be able to achieve spiritual emancipation at all. Jiva lalosa je iri uri dai, Krishna dara parayana Krishna nahi pai. Someone who runs here and there simply trying to satisfy the dictations of the tongue, who is a slave to the impulse of the genitals and the belly, he cannot achieve the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So now Narada Muni explains to the hunter what is the reaction for his heinous act of half killing the animals and causing them to suffer extreme pain before finally killing them. Bada tumi jivo maro alpo aparatumar. Narada Muni continued, "My dear hunter, your business is killing animals. That is a slight offense on your part. But when you consciously give them unnecessary pain by leaving them half dead, you incur very great sins." Purport. This is another good instruction to animal killers. There are always animal killers and animal eaters in human society, because less civilized people are accustomed to eating meat. In Vedic civilization, meat eaters are advised to kill an animal for the goddess Kali or a similar demigod. This is in order not to give the animal unnecessary pain, as slaughterhouses do. In the Balidan sacrifice to a demigod, it is recommended to cut the throat of an animal with one slice. This should be done on a dark moon night, and the painful noises expressed by the animal at the time of being slaughtered are not to be heard by anyone. There are also many other restrictions. Slaughter is only allowed once a month, and the killer of the animal has to suffer similar pains in his next life. At the present moment, so-called civilized men do not sacrifice animals to a deity in a religious or ritualistic way. They openly kill animals daily by the thousands for no purpose other than the satisfaction of the tongue. Because of this, the entire world is suffering in so many ways. Politicians are unnecessarily declaring war, and according to the stringent laws of material nature, massacres are taking place between nations. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmana sarvasa ahankara vibhudatma kortahamiti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul under the influence of the three modes of material nature thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by nature. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. The laws of Prakriti, nature, are very stringent. No one should think that he has the freedom to kill animals and not suffer the consequences. One cannot be saved by doing this. Narada Muni herein says that animal killing is offensive, especially when animals are given unnecessary pain. Meat eaters and animal killers are advised not to purchase meat from the slaughterhouse. They can worship Kali once a month, kill some unimportant animal and eat it. Even by following this method, one is still an offender. Thus in Prabhupada's purport. Here some people say, well, what if you don't have nothing else to eat, or if what do you do? So it says here that, well, if a person's a hunter, say a person's an Eskimo or some tribal person, they have no other way of, that's their tradition, is to hunt and eat some animal. Even then, just as Lord Buddha said, no one should kill an elephant or kill especially a cow. Even the king of Thailand, who is a Buddhist, during his birthday he is banned the killing of any cows. And he is offered that if anyone will give a cow, save from slaughter and give him a cow, he will stamp it with the royal seal that it can never be slaughtered again, and he'll put it under a special protected status. Because Lord Buddha said to kill cows and other similarly highly evolved animals is a great sin, a great bad karma, and therefore it should be avoided. But there are other people have to eat meat, then there are goats, pigs, other smaller, less evolved animals. But then, if one kills the animal, is a hunter, that may be less sinful. Slight reaction may be there. But to torture them and have them killed in a slaughterhouse, or have them killed in this painful way, where one doesn't need to do so, where one is not a hunter, where one is otherwise not obliged, then one has to take a greater reaction. If one living in a city feels compelled to take flesh, then this system of giving a sacrifice to Kali is recommended. Actually, Kali herself is a vegetarian under most circumstances, because she's the wife of Lord Shiva, so she eats only what Shiva leaves as remnant on his plate. It's said that when meat is offered to her, she gives it to her consorts, her various associates, who are various witches, ghosts, demons, and so on. And one can get their remnants. Actually, one is getting bhut prasad when one takes remnant from Kali. Nonetheless, the system is such that one gets a minimum reaction by doing it that way. Of course, in the West, they would consider this barbaric or something, that an animal is sacrificed before a deity like Kali, who is a deity of destruction, who is a form of the material energy Durga. They would think that this is something very barbaric or paganistic or something. But they think nothing of slaughtering billions of animals in modern slaughterhouses. Actually, the Veda culture understands that there are going to be certain people who are bound to kill animals. So it gives some facility so that just like the government licenses liquor stores, not because it's saying everybody should become a drunkard or drink liquor, because if they try prohibition, then it just promotes black marketeering and other forms of under-the-table operations, illegal, illicit operations. So to control the whole thing, because then spurious liquors, more people die due to taking improperly made spirits. They have licensed alcohol. But that's supposed to be more restrictive. Similarly, Krishna, through the Vedas, God has provided, oh, if you're going to somehow or another, you must eat meat, then do it this way at least. And then that'll cause at least suffering for the animal. The animal gets the blessing of becoming a human being in the next life. And the person who's eating the meat, then he has to alone get the suffering. It doesn't implicate others. And that suffering is also minimized. If the animal's head is not chopped off in one clean sweep, then it's also considered a great sin by the pujari who does the offering. So they have the chopper, and with one clean sweep, they take off the head. The animal doesn't even know what's happening. And especially goats are real stupid. The goat sitting there eats the grass right to the last minute. And when it's just one sweep like that, it doesn't hardly make a sound even. So, actually, if you see the way the animals are herded into the slaughterhouses, the way that they're electrically shocked, and sometimes the way that, even in the temple, we can't say what the horrible things they're doing to these animals. How they take the chickens and they're putting them in electrocuting water. And then when they're not fully, even then they don't all die, they throw them into boiling water and then they're plucking out. Horrible things that they're doing. It's just what Mrigari was doing, half killing the animals, and they're just shaking in the ground. This similar kind of torture is given to these chickens, animals, cows, and other animals for slaughtering them. So actually, if you compare, you'll find that this Vedic tradition, where a demigod who is a minor administrative assistant in the universal administration under the Supreme Godhead, where an animal is offered to some demigod and the remnant is taken, that it is as far as possible painless. Of course, pain must be there when you get killed. Nobody has no such thing as a painless death in this world. There is going to always be some feeling of some sort. But it is kept to a minimum, and therefore the reaction is kept to a minimum. But actually the best thing is that human beings should become eaters of Krishna prasadam. That is the actual best thing they should do. But if they don't, then this description is very enlightening. It's telling us what is the actual reaction, how to understand it. So Narada Muni continues. Narada Muni continued, all the animals that you have killed and given unnecessary pain will kill you one after the other in your next life and in life after life. Purport. This is another authoritative statement made by the great sage Narada. Those who kill animals and give them unnecessary pain, as people do in slaughterhouses, will be killed in a similar way in the next life and in many lives to come. One can never become excused from such an offense. If one kills many thousands of animals in a professional way so that other people can purchase the meat to eat, one must be ready to be killed in a similar way in his next life and in life after life. There are many rascals who violate their own religious principles. According to the Judeo-Christian scriptures, it is clearly said, "Thou shalt not kill." Nonetheless, giving all kinds of excuses, even the heads of religions indulge in killing animals while trying to pass as saintly persons. This mockery and hypocrisy in human society bring about unlimited calamities. Therefore, occasionally there are great wars. Masses of such people go out onto the battlefields and kill themselves. Presently, they have discovered the atomic bomb, which is simply awaiting wholesale destruction. If people want to be saved from the killing business life after life, they must take to Krishna consciousness and cease sinful activity. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness recommends that everyone abandon meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. When one gives up these sinful activities, he can understand Krishna and take to this Krishna consciousness movement. We therefore request everyone to abandon sinful activity and chant the Hare Krishna mantra. In this way, people can save themselves from repeated birth and death. End of the Bhaktivedanta purports. Text 252. Narada sange vyadher mona porasana hoilo tarabakya sunimone bhoya upajilo. In this way, through the association of the great sage Narada Muni, the hunter was a little convinced of his sinful activity. He therefore became somewhat afraid due to his offenses. Vyada kohe vallohete e amar karma kamone ko torimu mui parmona odamo. The hunter then admitted that he was convinced of his sinful activity. And he said, I have been taught this business from my very childhood. Now I am wondering how I can become free from these unlimited volumes of sinful activity. Purport. This kind of admission is very beneficial as long as one does not again commit sin. Cheating and hypocrisy are not tolerated by higher authorities. If one understands what sin is, he should give it up with sincerity and regret and surrender unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his agent, the pure devotee. In this way, one can be freed from the reactions of sin and make progress in devotional service. However, if one continues committing sins after making some atonement, he will not be saved. In the Shastra, such atonement is compared to an elephant's bathing. An elephant takes a very good bath and cleanses its body very nicely. But as soon as it comes out of the water, it picks up some dust on the shore and throws it all over its body. Atonement may be carried out very nicely, but it will not help a person if he continues committing sins. Therefore, the hunter first admitted his sinful activity before the saintly person, Narada, and then asked how he could be saved. E papa jai mor kamone upaya upaye nistar koho Koroho more poro tumar paye. The hunter continued, my dear sir, please tell me how I can be relieved from the reactions of my sinful life. Now I fully surrender unto you and fall down at your lotus feet. Please deliver me from sinful reactions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. By the grace of Narada Muni, the hunter came to his good senses and immediately surrendered unto the saint's lotus feet. This is the process. By associating with a saintly person, one is able to understand the reactions of his sinful life. When one voluntarily surrenders to a saintly person who is a representative of Krishna and follows his instructions, one can become freed from sinful reaction. Krishna demands the surrender of a sinful man, and Krishna's representative gives the same instructions. The representative of Krishna never tells his disciple, surrender unto me. Rather, he says, surrender unto Krishna. If the disciple accepts this principle and surrenders himself through the representative of Krishna, his life is saved. Narada kohe jodi dharo amara vachana, tabe se korite pari tumara mochana. Narada Muni assured the hunter, if you listen to my instruction, I shall find the way you can be liberated. So, it goes on. So just to summarize what happens, Narada Muni tells him to break his bow. The person is afraid. If I break the bow, how can I maintain myself? Narada Muni tells him, don't worry, I will provide your food. Being reassured by Narada Muni, the hunter broke his bow and fell down at Narada Muni's lotus feet and fully surrendered. Then Narada Muni gave him instructions for spiritual advancement. He advised the hunter to return to his house, distribute whatever wealth he received from killing, and give it to the pure brahmanas who know the absolute truth. And after giving his riches away, he should and his wife leave the home, taking each a cloth to wear. He told them to go to a river and construct a small cottage. In front of the cottage, they should grow a tulsi plant on a raised platform. Then after planting the tulsi, they should daily circumambulate the tulsi plant, serve her by giving her water and other things, and continuously chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In this way, Narada Muni said, I will send you sufficient food every day. You can take as much food as you want. In this way, Narada Muni freed the half-killed animals, bringing them to consciousness. The hunter was struck with wonder to see Narada Muni's mystic power in bringing back the dead animals, the half-killed animals, to complete health and freeing them. He offered his obeisances to Narada Muni and returned to his home. He did exactly as he was instructed. The news became spread far and wide that he was a Vaishnava, and people brought alms to him, the Vaishnava who had previously been a hunter. In this way, so much food came that there was enough for 10 or 20 people. So the hunter could only accept, whatever they accepted, only what they needed. They didn't accept more. One day, Narada Muni came with his friend Parvati Muni, who wanted to see his disciple, the hunter. Or Narada Muni actually requested him, come and see my hunter disciple. My disciple, the hunter. When the saintly sages came to the hunter's place, the hunter could see them coming from a distance. So, the hunter, he ran towards his spiritual master. But he couldn't fall down and offer his obeisance because ants were running hither and thither around his feet. So seeing the ants, the hunter, he was jumping this way and that way, trying to escape, crushing them. Then he smoothed them away with his cloth very carefully, and then he fell down and offered his obeisances. So then Narada commented that, my dear hunter, such behavior is not at all astonishing. A man in devotional service is automatically non-violent. He is the best of gentlemen. O hunter, good qualities like non-violence which you have developed are not very astonishing, for those engaged in the Lord's devotional service are never inclined to give pain to others because of envy. This way, the hunter was so fortunate he could receive his guru, these great sages, in his courtyard of his house, and he gave them a sitting place and gave them water, washed their lotus feet, In this way, the husband and wife sprinkled the water on their heads and drank the water for their purification. The hunter chanted Krishna Maha Mantra before his spiritual master. His body trembled, his tears welled, his eyes welled with tears. He was filled with ecstatic love. He raised his hands and began to dance, waving his garments up and down. When Parvati Muni saw the ecstatic loving symptoms of the hunter, he told Narada Muni, "Certainly, you are a touchstone." Parvati Muni continued that, "My dear friend Narada Muni, you are glorified as a sage amongst the demigods. By your mercy, even a low-born person like this hunter can immediately become attached to Lord Krishna." So in this way, the hunter had achieved everything that he needed, more grains than he could use. There was no want. And he was saved from the sinful reactions to his violent activities. So just as Narada Muni has delivered this hunter, somehow or another, the so-called civilized people of the Western world who have fallen to this similar situation as Magari the hunter, where they are unnecessarily killing animals to feed their carnal instincts, to feed their tongues, when there's adequate alternative foodstuff available. Somehow or another, by the association of pure devotees, people must become purified to give up this horrible habit. Then only can the world have real peace. Then only can we be secure from the total destruction of this modern civilization due to nuclear wars or world wars and holocaust. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? I have no objection to having a restaurant. It's a good preaching. We have the manpower, infrastructure, capital, so on. We were discussing that it's easier to do catering first. It's easier to make cookies and bakery things and sell first. You have to do a market research if you want to have a restaurant to see whether the clientele is adequate, whether the traffic flow, do we have the manpower. Restaurant means you have to work morning to night. But catering is easy if you advertise. Just like this is known as the convention city. Isn't it? Atlanta. So some of these conventions, every time you see conventions, there's different people that organize these conventions. They're professional convention makers. When people want to put on a convention, they go to these organizers of conventions, say, make us a convention. They rent the halls, they organize the entertainment, they organize the catering, they do everything. So we can even contact these various organizers of conventions and various companies that during your convention have one feast vegetarian. And that's very profitable. And that way you can reach some of the elite people of the country. Because it's profitable in this way that you know exactly how many plates you have to make. You make that many plates, it's very controlled. In a restaurant, you make every day a certain amount of food. It's not sold every day. Sometimes it's surplus is there. And it requires a lot of overhead. You have to, you know, keep people there no matter how many people come or not. You have to pay rent. You have so many overheads. You have inspection. Anyway, you have to have your kitchen certified before you can do it. But this catering business is something which you can do unhesitatingly. We have very good cooks here. There's no difficulty to do that. Well, a restaurant, you have to dedicate a number of people to do that. I'm not sure that we have the people for that. That you can discuss. But I wouldn't, it's good practice and it'd be a good name for us if we got into a, we can have a card printed up, we can make it as a separate business under one of our trusts, but I mean, it can be done as a professional thing and promoted. High school sororities, college and university have fraternities, sororities. At least they always have parties and things. Sometimes they have feasts. Sometimes they could have. It's just a question of sending out, printing out, have somebody write up a good write up on it, and going around, and then sometime inviting the heads of
having maybe even a banquet sometime where you invite all the heads of these conferences, these the organizers of conferences. You call maybe there's 10 or 20 of them here. Even one day you somehow arrange that they all come and take a vegetarian, give them a first class thing. Catering also, one thing you have to do is how to decorate the plates, how to make it look very nice with flowers and the vegetables and the salad. And, you know, not just that you come out in tin foil plates and plastic, but, you know, it has to be done that the plates themselves look very attractive. You can get $10, $15, $20, $50, depending, you know, various, you can get a lot for one plate. So, you know, based on certain market rates. So we can definitely charge less for a vegetarian meal than they get charged for a meat meal, but make it very attractive and nice. So I'd recommend doing that first. And you can consult a restaurant. I think in the we were discussing having more a food for life type program here in Atlanta, like all you can eat for something or that type of a program, because there are a lot of Martin Luther's King, there's a lot of poor people, there's a lot of people that could use food at a low rate, at a kind of cheap rate. You could have a vegetarian club here in this temple downstairs. Encourage people to join, put up signs and save Ananda's in different places. Kind of like a vegetarian club. People come here, take vegetarian meal, get very simple one, like they do in, like they have in Dallas. The cook in the temple kitchen, the meal. They have a salad bar, and they have one entree every day, one special plate with a few a la carte, but generally just one main thing. People go into the temple if they want, or they go right into Kalachan's restaurant, and it's then got very high reviews. But in case for zoning, if you can't have it as a full-out restaurant, you can have it as a vegetarian club. Everyone that comes in has to join the club. It's a club you can get away. $1 a year, you know, join the club. Sign up. Yeah. The thing is that when we meet people on the street, we want them, when we meet people in our preaching, we want them to first be devotees, to chant Hare Krishna, to accept Krishna consciousness, because that's the only way they, actually people, even they want to stop me, they can't. Unless they develop a higher taste, they can't stop it very easily. Although some are by willpower, but it's very difficult for them. It's very easy if they become Krishna conscious. So in our preaching, we preach against these things, but our primal thing is to preach in such a way that people take our books, that they chant Hare Krishna when we come direct, one-on-one, direct, personal. But there's a good opportunity for having some preachers groomed as a more kind of extension to public affairs preacher. I've discussed this with Mukunda Maharaj and different leaders in public affairs, and they've done it in Washington to some degree. But I feel that we should do it on a local level, especially we could do it possibly with some of our perfection home devotees. That, for instance, there's the vegetarian clubs, become members of these. That person would become a member on our behalf. There's clubs for cruelty to animals. There's so many different clubs, so many different associations. So that one person or two people, they become active and go to those meetings and use those forums for supporting the things that we agree in, and also for pushing a little bit higher understanding of the matter. It's also interesting, I'd like to see if it was possible, that if a good writer was active in public affairs work, and every time something is always happening in the world, every day newspaper has news, and some things are very graphic, where people are praise a lot of thought. So those things, when they happen, like why is there terrorism? Why is there this? Why is there that? Then if a person was expert and gave a Krishna conscious It's like leader, a spokesman for the Hare Krishna movement or internationally of Krishna conscious states, that nuclear holocaust in Russia is a forerunner of things to come. If people don't stop eating meat, they say that meat eating is a cause for these type of dangers, because unnecessary suffering is being given to animals. If some newspapers or media pick it up, it'd be interesting. And this way, millions of people at one time would be able to see our opinion on that. That would have more effect. When you're one-on-one preaching to someone, you don't want to burn the person out, that I reject Krishna consciousness, I can't immediately right now see myself stopping eating meat. But in a broader sense, we'd like people to, in the form of our books, if they read it, when they're sitting down, they can understand it, they can get it, it's more effective. But just when we meet people, we don't want to just come off right away challenging everything they do. They get all emotionally upset, and they just feel that, you know, these people are too heavy. We have to come out and develop first a personal relationship with the people. We have to establish a rapport with them and gradually encourage them to process how to come up. So when someone's actually talking with us, that's a different opportunity. Then we have a chance of developing this kind of personal touch. When we're when we're distributing books, we can give these things within our books. Then a person in his own solitude, the security of his house, he can read all the reasoning and rationale. An intelligent person then can say, well, what they're saying makes sense. If you're just talking to someone, it's hard to really, they don't really listen when you're saying something that they don't want to hear in many cases. And so you start keep on telling them things they don't want to hear. Instead, they just become negative. And then they don't listen at all. They don't take any books. So we have to be careful in preaching that we don't come off completely. In our personal dealing, we should be very friendly and very open. And when a person is advanced enough, then we can get on their case, so to speak. We can get heavy with them that they should take up this higher standard of living. Or if a person is coming on us in an offensive way, then we can turn around and start to challenge them if we feel that it's cost-effective. Why they're supporting all these hideous things going on in society, to put them on the defensive. But generally, a person just walks in if they don't want to completely hit them over the head with a sledgehammer. But we should find the forums. There should be some forums. There should be, in our written work, I think we could hand out writings. There could be forums. There could be a program at different colleges where you make a vegetarian day or vegetarian week. There may already be something like that in America. If there isn't, it's something we could promote, and then during that time, we could do, you know, we could give out free meals, or, you know, give out meals that are cheap at some kind of a rate, in those institutions. We could do various things to promote Krishna consciousness through these movements. But it should be done in a very professional way. It shouldn't be done in a haphazard way. It should be done in the way appropriate for the sophisticated 20th century America that we live in. So that people actually get impressed that these people are really together, they have got the proper idea, and they're not fanatic, they're very reasonable, they're very rational, it's very convincing. Any questions?